It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I am your host, Phil Iscove, and this week we have TV writer and cultural journalist Alana Bennett on. She writes currently on Roswell, New Mexico on the CW, and we're going to be talking about episode 117 entitled Assassins. But first, Alana, I just sort of want to know how Felicity came into your life, why you like it, don't like it, if it still speaks to you. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it's kind of a roundabout way that Felicity came into my life. I believe that the first episode I saw was the last day of the WB network. They played a bunch of the pilots of the show. That's how I started watching Dawson's Creek. It's how I first saw the first episode of Felicity. But I didn't actually watch all of Felicity until like 2 years ago. Because I had watched most of the old WB dramas. Like, I grew up obsessed with them. And it was like, that was the one I hadn't done. And I was in the mood for some Sarah McLachlan and some sweaters. And I think of it as like the perfect, like, solo concept. It would never be made today. Like, just emotional drama, mm-hmm. Great sweaters, great, like Sarah McLachlan crooning, like that type of, yeah, I needed that in my life.
it's a very, it's a very emo show. Everyone looks very warm, very autumnal. It's very, it's a very inviting show. And it's funny you talk about how like low concept it is. As low concept as it is, she still seems a little insane.
Yes, she does. And as low concept as it is, it's still... Is this a spoiler if I say how
it
ends with time travel?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like nothing is really as low concept as you might think it is, but it is like, it's like everybody speaks in such calm NPR voices on that show. It's kind of like ASMR, the TV show.
Oh, 100%. Especially all the Dear Sally, like all the audio, or like leaving the tapes for Janine Garofalo for Sally. It's also kind of amazing too how, obviously we talk about JJ a lot, mm-hmm. on these episodes, but it is interesting how, I mean, Alias premieres in the middle of Felicity's run.
Yes.
So it's not a surprise to me anyway that time travel comes at the end of Felicity.
He was tired of not having time travel and things. He was like, from here on out, only time travel.
which, by the way, kind of his thing. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of time travel in shows. But it is really funny to think of how earnest the show starts. Mm-hmm. And through the course of, you know, haircuts and the like, the show has no choice but to sort of really up the ante. Mm-hmm. And kind of everything just gets so much more dramatic, which is ironic since it starts pretty dramatic, just in a different type of drama.
Stalking. Starts with some light stalking.
Starts with some light stalking. Starts with some perhaps overly emotional yearbook notes.
Yeah.
I don't think that Ben should get off completely. I mean, he did write some shit in there that would set someone off, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know about changing their entire life necessarily, but it is interesting. So you watched it on video, like on DVD, or how did you?
I watched it on Hulu, which tragically means that I did miss out on the Sarah McLachlan part because they changed the music. And it took me a while to realize that, but in like season two, they reference how much Sarah McLachlan she listens to. And I'm like, I haven't heard a single Sarah McLachlan song. I feel so robbed.
It's funny you should say that because our listeners will know that I have the DVD box set. And the DVD box set of season one, the pilot and the finale have the original music cues.
Okay.
But that's the only place you can get
Wow, them. Even the DVDs? I was wondering if I could like get the DVDs and get the real experience. Where is the real experience?
It's very strange. The only show that I know that the DVDs are, that the music cues are intact on, weirdly, are on the first, why do I know this? The first printing of the Dawson's Creek DVDs have the original music cues.
So if we have to go after if you want the real 90s experience?
That's what you got to go for. It's weird. Oh, it's very strange. But yeah, so it's interesting that the show, which sort of hinged so much on its music cues, would have them removed. I guess there was really no choice in the matter, but that's what it
is. Yeah, I can imagine that would be like a nightmare as a creative to put so much of your like money and time and heart into like that whole aspect of an experience and then just have it not be last. Like, how do we fix that? How do we make this not happen?
So what is it like for you on Roswell right now? Are they, I mean, I'm assuming you have a music supervisor. I'm sure that you guys, you know, you produce your episodes and I'm assuming that when a cut goes in, you get to see it perhaps with music. Yeah. Do you get to hear it? Okay. So you do.
Yeah. We do. And we do mixes and we do spottings where we can make suggestions and hear if this song costs $25,000 and we maybe want to change it out if it's really that, if it's worth $25,000 to us.
Yeah.
But our creator, Karina McKenzie, is like very opinionated about the music of the show. And like, it's a very important part of the like aesthetic and the experience to her. So I am like, if it was like 10 years down the line and you just like strip that away for like whatever the cheapest like sounding similar one is, like I think it would be kind of heartbreaking.
It really would be. We are lucky enough to have Karina is actually coming on for a future episode. She will be coming on for the infamous haircut episode.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
So we're very excited to have her on. But yeah, it's clear to me that she cares very much about the music cues, the vibe of the show, understandably so. And I assume that the Felicity people did too. So it's heartbreaking, in my opinion anyway, to watch some of these, especially the ones where you have a scene with no dialogue, right? Where you have a montage or something like that, and then you lose this music cue. It sucks, but we don't actually have many of them in this episode now that I think about it. But it is interesting. So I'm going to give a synopsis of this episode. Basically, the morning after the big fight, Noel confesses he made a huge mistake in going off with his ex-girlfriend, Hannah, played by Jennifer Garner in the previous episode, and begs Felicity for another try at their relationship. Felicity struggles to tell Noel about her own indiscretion with Eli. I'm going to get it to Eli, but played by Simon Rex, an artist who she lost her virginity to in a art studio in the previous episode. Sean's got a crush and Julie's helping him strategize. Ben is hanging out with Lynn, his swimming buddy, more than with Julie. And Richard gives Noel advice on women and love. And Felicity and Noel go gunning for each other as the dorm engages in an elaborate game of Assassins. Assassins aired on April 20th, 1999, after a 6-week break after the last episode. It was written by Andrea Newman and Jennifer Levin and was directed by Michael Schultz. I'm assuming you didn't watch the previous episode, or did you watch the previous episode?
I did not. I mean,
I'm sure you would see it, so you know it. Yeah. Right. The previous episode was called The Fugue, for the people that perhaps didn't watch or listen to the previous episode. And it's a pretty seismic episode, at least from a drama perspective. Which Jennifer Garner comes back into Noel's life, who is his ex-girlfriend, and future wife, and then future ex-wife.
Yeah. A lot went on between those two.
Indeed.
together through one JJ show, torn apart by another JJ show.
Yeah, and then torn apart by Ben Affleck. So yeah. it's a real roller coaster with Jen Garner. She comes back into his life, and essentially they sort of kind of, in classic broadcast romance, they kind of break up, but don't totally break up, but they break up enough for each of them to have indiscretions and then try to come back together. And so basically Felicity goes off with this art student. He goes off with his girlfriend, but Noel does not actually have sex with his ex. Whereas Felicity does. Mm-hmm. And here we are. It's very dramatic. That sort of lays the groundwork for this episode in terms of where we're at. And it's a great place to leave on a cliffhanger, obviously, to go away for 6 weeks, to come back after all of that. It's a good place to be. It's good drama, good TV. But I guess my question to you, and one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on for this episode, and maybe specifically to have a girl on for this episode, is because of the sort of gender perspective that's going on in this episode. I don't love that Felicity is the villain.
Right. Yeah. I think it's even more, it feels even more dramatic. It felt even more dramatic rewatching it. Than the Friends classic, we're on a break thing. It's just like, because it's in a drama, probably, because it is like, they're all like, like just crying. But it is like, it was so, I just found it wrenching for her. Like, it just felt like tragic for her, as opposed to like she just made like a very spur of the, and kind of out of character decision that she can sense is out of character for her, because like, you know, lose your virginity however you want. It's fine if you lose it with a random art guy, but it's not something Felicity would usually do unless she's heartbroken. So it's like a lot of things led her directly there. And so like, it is kind of hard to watch the like, the moments where there aren't like empathy for her, which I don't necessarily think that the writers didn't have the empathy for her, but it is like the conflict of the episode is she did something shitty. And and like kind of they both did something shitty, but who was shittier? And it's like, I don't know that there's really an answer. It's who hurt who, and can you get past it?
I totally agree with that. I think that this is sort of a testament to how good the writing is, how good the casting is, and the directing is of this show. That in lesser hands, and I'm sure I say this on every episode of this miniseries, but in lesser hands, this would not work.
Right.
And yet somehow they find a way to navigate the minefield, and kind of mess up their characters along the way, but we still love them nonetheless. I mean, I think that, I fully believe that Noel wouldn't go through with it.
You're right.
That's not a surprise to me. Because he's Noel. I understand the frustration that he would feel and how hurt he would be by that. But I don't fully think he's allowed to be as sanctimonious as he is.
Especially because he did go there intending to do that. He was like, sorry, hun, I love you, but I really want to have sex with her. So I'm going to go over there and have sex with her. And you can't be surprised that she got so upset that she went out and have sex with somebody else. In that moment, that was like... That was amongst the few options.
It should also be said, and I talked about this in the previous episode as well, but Felicity in the previous episode knows what's about to happen, and she calls Noel, and he doesn't pick up the phone because he's not in his dorm room, and that's enough for her to be like, fuck it, So it's not as though Felicity didn't, and Lord knows she's a very calculated character. So it's not like you can't say that she didn't, you know, do her best to try to not hurt him.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So I kind of, that's why I don't love, there's a couple scenes where he gets a little feisty with her, where you're just like, yeah. Dude, come on.
Yeah, especially like when he then tries to sleep with her when he's drunk.
That's not
like
cool.
that was just such a cringy scene, because it is like, first of all, you're very drunk. Second of all, just because she had sex with this man does not mean you guys have not addressed your issues yet. You can't just assume that because she had sex for the first time, she's gonna automatically do it with you. Like, there were so many levels to it. I was like, Noel, come on. Come
it was
on.
Not a good look for Noel.
It was not his best.
Yeah. I as soon as he walked into the dorm drunk, I was like, in my brain, I like blocked it out.
Yeah.
And then when it happened, I was like, oh, fuck, no. Dude, this is bad. Yeah. So let's sort of, just to talk sort of broadly about the episode, I like the Assassin's Game. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fun conceit. I like that it's got some great subtext with Noel and Felicity. I love that we get to see Carrie Russell holding a gun before the Americans.
Yes. Maybe that was the first colonel.
The first colonel of it. It was, you know, it was a fun thing. I think the show does a very good job of finding kind of kitschy, fun, playful ways to come into this universe. You know, I've talked a little bit about how there aren't many shows about the college experience.
Yes, there are not.
And I don't quite know why that is. I don't know if it's because, I'm sure there's a myriad of reasons for it, but this show finds a way to make college seem very fun, even though it's not always fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know, this Assassin's Game, I think, showed some really fun colors in a bunch of the characters. Elena's character in particular, we got to see her be very combative and very competitive with people, which was fun. So I enjoyed that. The Sean storyline, do you have thoughts on dudes asking girls out in weird ways that I can't fully understand?
No, not like it for him. It's like, I don't know. I feel like he's a strange character in that regard. And he is often in that space, and it's not amongst my favorite spaces. I feel like once they settle him down in the later seasons, blanking on her name, the weird witchy roommate.
Megan, when he starts dating Megan.
I feel like then it's like,
I think he
kind of comes into focus for me more, because I do like the performer. I like that he's in every single J.J. Abrams thing, and like he's very like, I love Greg Gutenberg. Like he's great. But
everything.
But it's like when it comes to those stories, I'm like usually not as invested, because it does feel like kind of one note from that character.
It also feels a little bit like, meanwhile, in a different television show.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, like I liked that they used the, like, I thought it was really cool and clever that the Assassin's Game was like the framing of this episode, because I feel like it was like, this is going to be so dark. How do we make some aspect of this episode fun for people?
Yeah.
But like, then it is like, I feel like the other stuff kind of gets like the C&D stories get a little more lost.
I fully agree with that.
Yeah.
I thought that I agree with you. I think the Assassin's Game off of the Felicity Noel stuff is a really great kind of water and oil thing. And it breaks up the drama of Felicity's situation. Sean's thing felt a little bit like, you know, and I'm sure we've all been in writers' rooms where there's like, yeah, why don't we, Sean has a crush on a girl. And you're like, okay. And then someone writes that storyline and it's like four beats and it's over. But I'll say this. It does feel to me like, everyone's romantic feelings on this show are dialed up to 11.
Yeah. Right? Like, that person's the love of my life. I just saw them in the cafeteria.
like, you can be earnest and romantic and not a psycho. Like, there's a way to do that.
Yes. I think the show never really addressed that their concept was stalking. So they kind of bled into everything.
It's funny. Because, like, even Sean, who admittedly seems 7 to 10 years older than the rest of the show, this guy should know better.
Yes.
Right?
To be an adult. Like a little bit of an adult.
I'm a little bit of an adult. I did think the button of the day planner was cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And her being like, oh, I lost my planner. Yeah. that
didn't make me laugh. Which is such a, like, sure, it's cute and it's fine. We never see that girl again.
No!
Never see Chloe again. It was a cute storyline for what it was worth. I think that they then go down the Sean has a crush on Julie storyline.
Yes.
Which I respect the fact that she shoots him down. Mm-hmm. Like, other shows would try to force these two people together.
Right. So, and it never really becomes a thing. Like, I kind of like that. Like, did you do it? Yeah, with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they kind of did that with their first
season. I didn't watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's fair. It's supposed to be great, but yes.
That's fair. But the sum is that in the first season, they do that with, like, one character is, like, very earnestly, like, in love with another character who is kind of the cynical badass girl. And then, but then, like, at the end of the first season, I think they all realize that nobody liked that. That it was just like, we don't like him chasing after a girl who clearly doesn't like this. So they just stopped and they made it like a cute friendship instead. You can just move on. You don't have to have it like be like she gives in.
Right. That is a show that might be a perfect quarantine show for me to watch.
Yes. It's a very sunny, like, but not like, it's not sunny in a way that it feels false. Like, it feels just like a nice little place to be.
I'm rewatching The Office right now, which is fulfilling that for me. But maybe Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I'll check that out for sure. Yeah. So one of the other things that I kind of loved in this episode was Megan having no idea who Elena was. Megan in general is kind of my MVP of this show. Yes. I adore her on this show. I think she's great. Her outfit in the cafeteria,
yes,
is something else. the I remember, as I'm sure you do too, people with the orange and blue makeup,
and
like just people really going for it. And I always respected the fucking hell out of people like that.
Yes.
Because I am not that person. As I sit here in a black t-shirt, like I am the least adventurous person when it comes to my fashion. And I always adored people that were just like all out.
Yeah, and that turn of the century like era for it was like, it was peak. It was like the fishnet tops with the cargo pants and the, like, all the dudes with the spiked hair, the NSYNC thing. And I feel like Megan is like, because a lot of the fashion on this show is like very grounded, and then they just have her kind of set aside from that, which I really appreciate. I feel like we need that, like, spark of energy.
I couldn't agree with you more. I feel like, yeah, that period, you really had sort of like, electronic music was kind of popping a lot at that time. So you had a lot of people that were wearing sort of pseudo rave kind of things mixed with it was just, she's, and her whole aesthetic is.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
I guess everything. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, they just, they put everything into a pot. She's got like a barcode tattoo.
Right.
She's just.
Yeah, she's not one subculture. She's all the subculture. Yeah. And they kind of write her like that too. Like, when we see, like, meet her, some of her friends out in the world at some point, it's like a very confusing, like, who are these? Are they just the club rats? I like when she starts selling her own clothes and it's like, doesn't she make like arm warmers out of like socks or something like that.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
It's just, I really feel like the quote unquote crazy roommate in your dorm is kind of a trope, but they take it and they have fun with it. B, they actually turn her into like a three-dimensional character when she starts dating Sean.
Yeah.
And you start to see her turn, you know, become a real person.
Yeah.
But she's also, you know, the basis of a Twilight Zone episode. And yeah, like, she's just, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, and she also gets to have Felicity time travel. So like, it's really, Megan is the skeleton key to Felicity.
Yeah. She really is. She's like, you can't have that show without her, even though it seems like she's expendable. Like, she's really, when you think about it, she's like the linchpin of the entire thing.
She really does make the whole thing work. It's just kind of amazing. I really appreciated, and I'm curious as to your thoughts, the flower reveal, of the flowers show up at her door and she thinks,
oh yes, because that took me by surprise too. Like, I forgot that twist and I was like, they're not for me. Like, in the same moment that she was.
Yeah, the flowers came from the
door. That was amazing. Like,
they're in the room with you. Get out of there. It's really, it's a great little reveal. Like, it's really smart. I remember watching this episode with past and future guest Yonka Task, who we watched the show together. I think for the first like two seasons or so, we watched it in university together. And I remember him screaming like, "Oh no!" They're from Eli.
Yes,
it's pretty fantastic.
I feel like a well written romance. Like, I feel this way with the show Younger, but I feel like a well-written romance, you should watch it like it's a thriller. Like, you should have the same feelings going on inside of you.
Totally.
Of like, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Are they going to get found out? Are they not? Like, and I feel like this episode did that, of like the roller coaster of that.
I totally agree with you. I think if you're not invested in the romance, then there's no point.
Yeah.
And if you are invested, any turns are going to freak you out.
Yeah.
it's really great.
Like, I don't know if this is spoiler to talk about, but is like,
no, you can talk about it.
Do they get back together ever in the show? I was trying to remember like the arc, and it's like, I know they have like close things. I know they sleep together.
They do sleep together.
But like, and that's like the impetus of the time travel, kind of.
Sort of.
But
it's like, it's the sliding doors moment, is having sex with Noel on the roof in season 4.
But like, they never really, like, I know they like talk about their relationship after this, but it never circles back as like they're actually back together, right? Like, this is the actual like final technical breakup, which always felt weird to me.
It's funny when you say it like that. It's so true, and yet it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, because it is like the drama continues. Yeah, but I always wanted them to like find their way back to each other in a real way for like another second, like in order to make the final decision.
Yeah, it's, well, like, so, I mean, my sort of grander argument about Felicity is that season 1 is perfect.
Yes.
And then it's bumpy.
It has its moments after that, but there are a lot of moments when you're also like, what is happening?
it's one of those shows where like, I love season 1 so much that the goodwill that I have towards it powers me through whenever I rewatch the show.
Yeah.
And I really do respect and love the turns.
Yeah.
And to your point, there's some good stuff that happens in subsequent seasons. And I actually really love some of the weirdness in season 2, the Twilight Zone episode, for instance, and a lot of the stuff they do in it. But it is weird when you say that, because like, Noel and her never really get back together again. because after season two, everyone was terrified of doing anything.
Rock the boat because of her hair.
She literally like moves in with Ben and they go all in on Ben and
Felicity. Yeah. And I liked that they go all in on those two. I liked seeing that relationship and what it means to actually explore the drama when a relationship is happening as opposed to the drama when it's not happening. Cause that's it's interesting. Like a lot of shows skip that part, but I was kind of waiting and then it just never happened. And then I was like, yeah, go into time. You have to time travel cause you fucked it up. Yeah. Yeah, and then they fucked it up in the time travel too. But I derailed us.
I totally agree with you. It's, and you didn't derail us at all. Like, I think that the Felicity and Noel relationship, I would argue, might be more important than the Ben and Felicity relationship, because the Ben and Felicity one is, I hate to say it, but the more predictable one. Mm-hmm. It's the one that feels, what's the best way to put this? That feels inevitable.
Yeah.
As opposed to Noel, which feels a little bit different.
Yeah, and also their bond was stronger. Like, they were genuine. Like, that's what I, like, gravitated to with them, is, like, they genuinely understood each other and loved each other, even when they're not together, which in some relationships means you should just be friends. But in their case, I always felt like they were just avoiding the other part as opposed to shouldn't have the other part. It felt like if Joey and Pacey had never come back together at around the end. It felt like a missed opportunity.
100%. Well, I mean, yes. So my thing with Dawson's Creek is I really only watched the first couple seasons of it. Yeah. So I didn't stick with it all the way.
Yeah.
I heard that obviously she ends up with Pacey. She does not end up with Dawson, mm-hmm. which seems right.
Right.
because her and Dawson didn't really have much chemistry.
Crucial.
Which is kind of crucial, but again, really kind of comes back to how sometimes your lead character is your least interesting character.
Yeah.
And Dawson falls into that camp.
Yes.
Whereas with this show, it did feel as though the Ben Felicity thing was a bit of an inevitability.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, they were still compelling in a lot of ways.
Sure. I just watched a clip on Jimmy Kimmel, which I'll send you after this. Recently, they were on together. Carrie Russell and Scott Speedman just, I think, happened to be on the same episode.
Nice.
And he proceeded to talk about how terrible a boyfriend he was to her, which feels right.
Yeah, yeah.
But to sort of add into all this mix, I want to get your thoughts on Simon Rex and Eli.
Yes. First of all, can you tell me what I've seen that actor in before? Because it's stuck in my head. I can also just look it up. That was in the back of my head. I was watching this episode. It was an interesting dynamic because it was like he wasn't this like it would have been the easy route, I think, to make him just some fuckboy that she slept with.
Which he
is, but he also was like genuinely interested in her and like could have seen something like it didn't seem like he was like go away. It's like she was like but the moment that was like kind of the most heartbreaking was like the last one where Noel goes to him. And like he sees the sketch of her and he's like, who is this? And he's just like, oh, some girl. And he's like, I thought so. And she like storms out and Simon Rex realizes and like his face falls behind. Like that's kind of, it was an interesting, like we don't get that. I feel like I kind of get a sense of who that man is, even though he's like such a small character. I still feel like he's a person in this, which is which I feel like is a nice touch when he is the one who is the first person to like have sex with Felicity's first time like in a show like this. I think you do want it not to be literally a complete like stranger. You want to get a sense of who this person was, and that I like that it wasn't like when Felicity is like, oh no, it wasn't like super awkward and terrible. Like he was nice to me. Like I like that there had that element to it because it could have been all of the other things. It was like, it was a horrible experience in a lot of ways, but at least we hit the baseline of she didn't sleep with like a completely shitty human being.
I fully agree with all of that. And cause I think that to your point, they didn't write just some gross dude.
Yeah.
They tried to write elements of three-dimensionality to him. And I also don't want Felicity's first time to be with some, you know, terrible person.
Right.
That should go without saying. Now, Simon Rex, however, an actor.
Yes, yes.
Is painfully wooden.
Yes.
Like on the page, Eli as a character seems fine. Like he serves a purpose,
right.
And he does what hopefully you would hope the character to do. Eli as an actor, however, seems like such a fuckboy.
Yeah, he does feel like the whole thing is like he's that art boy,
art kid. It's just like that. He dead behind the eyes. There's nothing.
It's just
on top of all of this, as you can imagine, I was invested in the Noel and Felicity relationship because I see myself to a certain degree as a Noel in this equation. So some hot blue-eyed art student coming in and blowing up the relationship did not throw me.
No.
So it's unfortunate. I also felt like the conversation that Felicity has with Eli when she's breaking it off.
Yeah.
And he's sort of like, whatever.
Yeah. He's like, sure, I guess.
Like, I get it. But if that thing doesn't work out without the guy, like.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of too flexible. He'll take whatever scraps are around.
Exactly.
Also, I just realized I found out where I saw him from. Two years after this role, he was the boyfriend of Jenny Garth's character in What I Like About You, which is a show that I watched on repeat from 2002 to 2004.
There you go.
Yeah.
Was he good on that? Was he better on that?
He was better on that. He's more of an earnest boyfriend role in that. So it's just earnest boyfriend, laugh track comedy.
I have anything against Simon Rex as a human. I'm sure he's lovely.
No. I agree with you on this one, though.
The other thing, so just to bounce back quickly to the Sean Chloe thing, her pseudo Asian shirt that she's wearing in the library felt very 1999
to me. Yes.
That's moment.
I feel like everybody had the who knows what, if they actually said words, it was 100% cultural appropriation. It feels it feels like everybody had those Forever 21 Delia's shirts, and it was constant appropriation that we all rethought a couple years later. But now they're just immortalized.
At the time, seemed cool. I like that Richard gives Noel the idea to go talk to Felicity about Eli. Mm-hmm. Richard being obviously the worst possible influence on everybody on this show. So I thought that was fun. This is the first, there's basically three big Noel Felicity scenes. This second one where Noel sounds like a whiny baby. And then smashes something in her room.
That was not a good look.
A fucking lunatic. And I was just like, dude, this is absurd. But I do like that it sends Felicity to Julie and they have a really nice conversation in the cafeteria together. I've talked about this in previous episodes and I'm curious as to your thoughts on this as well. I don't know that this show does the best job with the female friendships on this show.
Yeah. It's like
in terms of,
sorry.
No, please.
I agree with you. I think it's they scrape the surface of them. They clearly want to be doing that job with them, but they have I feel like it's they always choose something else to take up that space. Or it is they have the conversation, which is very nice. They have when Julie has her rape storyline, I feel like they have it a little bit more, but it is it always takes the back seat. And I feel that the characters, the development of some of the supporting characters sometimes suffers because of that, because they don't get that time with Felicity or even just with each other.
I agree.
But I do like that, they do nod to it, which is nice. I liked in this episode that they do have that moment. Cause it did feel I was kind of craving that throughout. I was I need Felicity to talk to somebody empathetic about this for 5 seconds. Somebody who's not going to see her as a villain cause she's just beating herself up so much. So I did like the one in this episode, but overall it's I always crave a little bit more.
It does. I mean, it feels like a little bit of a symptom of a show that was created by two white guys, in a lot of ways. I think that there's a fair amount of female writers on this show, thankfully, and some diversity on the show as well. But I do feel like this scene, I mean, this is two female writers that wrote this episode, and this scene felt very real. It felt like a very necessary, to your point, not even at Olive Branch, because they're not on particularly bad terms at this point in the show, but just that there's an empathy there. You know what I mean? There's a genuine sense of someone who understands what you're going through. And I think that the show tends to sort of lean on its love triangle, understandably. That was, you know, it knows where its bread is buttered. but part of that also feels like the male writers wanting male characters to write to a certain degree. So I think that it's nice to see that Felicity and Julie scene, which is then ended with Richard getting all up in her face and her shooting him in the face, which I appreciated. And then getting Noel's name in the game of assassins, which is fun. So now we have the scene that you mentioned earlier with the Noel scoping out Eli at the art studio, which is very strange. And again, like, and I don't mean to harp on this, but every time there's a camera pointed at Simon Rex, it almost feels like he's surprised that there's a camera pointed at him. He's like, oh, it's on me now. So I don't love it.
It's not his best. It's not his best guest star role.
So I get that he like wanted to see what the guy looked like, I guess.
Yeah.
That's sort of what it feels like. And then there's the, who's this? And Eli saying, just some girl. Noel then proceeds to get drunk and try to have sex with Felicity. As we mentioned, it's a terrible look. But I think this leads nicely into what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, which is that even through all these sort of like bumps in the road, through the sort of roller coaster of this episode, the show finds a way to end the episode on a very nice scene of two people that realize that they love each other, but that they fucked this up.
Yeah.
And that they're not sure what the road forward is, which again is a great last scene heading into the last five episodes of the season to sort of really put them at a crossroads. I think it's a great place to be. And again, sort of shows that even with all this crazy sort of WB drama that's happening over the preceding, you know, 40 minutes or so of the episode, the writers and the cast and everyone can find a way to have a really nice, grounded, you know, small scene that's beautifully shot, that has that really lovely final shot outside the window of this, of the city line behind them and all that. Like So the show, even in all of its lunacy, even over the course of its entire series of like craziness, the show is able to find these very genuine moments, and I think that's something.
Yes, and I feel it is something that I feel like is kind of was a key of that like WB era, and that Felicity kind of feels like did especially well, like even better than a lot of the other ones, as those like very quiet, grounded, beautiful moments amongst the lunacy. Because it is like, I think it's part of what I love about these shows is that they are so grounded. They are so low concept in today's parlance, because I do want the just like the human drama of it, the like we just hurt each other and that's the like high drama of the episode, and I feel like they did bring it back to that like really nicely.
No, I fully agree with you. It's really interesting because it does feel like rewatching this show not just makes me feel good just from a nostalgic perspective, but also just makes me think about how it does feel like today everything needs to be baked into a piece of IP, which is larger than life. And I'm not throwing shade at these things. I understand why they exist. And I mean, Sleepy Hollow is very much that. Like, I'm not under any delusions here, but I think that, that it makes me think back to a time when we didn't have to be so reliant on these pieces of IP, on supernatural components or comic book properties or Archie comics, whatever it is.
Yeah.
We used to just be able to have a show about a girl who crazily enough, decided to throw her whole life into chaos and move to New York for a boy. And that was enough mm-hmm. to fuel 100 episodes of television.
Right. Like, it feels like kind of almost right. even, I don't want to say which one, if there's one that's harder, but it is hard in itself, I think, to write like a very grounded thing that is still like super compelled, like you're compelled by this, by these people when they're just people, when you know 1,000 people exactly like them, and that helps, but it also means that like you're going to spot the cracks easier if they don't feel real. And I feel like it, like Felicity feels like a real person to me. And yeah. she, and like, and I'm sure sometimes she falls into the like main character thing, but a lot of the times for me, she doesn't. Like, she's like compelling. Like, she is, sometimes makes horrible decisions and sometimes she makes amazing decisions, but I'm still like, I'm always there. Like, and she always feels like real and like I could like reach out and like touch her.
And I mean, this, you know, this is something that we both know, which is that character's everything, right? I mean, everything yeah. else is bullshit. It's all smoke and mirrors, right? And as long as your audience loves your characters, they're going to go on the ride, whatever the ride might very well be. And I guess that's now I'm going to shoot my argument in the, my previous argument in the foot, but it does go to show that, you know, if people care about your characters, it doesn't matter if they exist in a universe with superheroes right. or whatever the case might be, because you're invested in that person and you can kind of yada yada away all of your mythology and just be what it is and just allow the show to be about these characters. So if you write the characters well, everything else is kind of moot. And to Felicity's point, like all the drama in the world doesn't matter. If you don't care about Felicity, it's all bullshit. It
doesn't yeah. matter. Even like Ben is a character who I feel like I could have been easily way more bored with than I was. He has moments where he is, but he ended up being written more compellingly and played more compellingly than I expected going into the show. I knew he would be hot. I didn't know I would care about him. You know what I mean? Like, I knew he would be hot and that's all that she needed to move across the country for him. But like, I didn't expect, like to be, like, I was affected, like, by him, like, throughout the show, even when he was, like, a shitty boyfriend. Like, I was totally, still like, totally. Well, he's been, he's trying.
he feels like a stupid golden retriever. You're just like, he's trying, he's a good dog.
He needs to be on the floor.
Yeah. He's like, he's sorry, he'll yeah. try to do better next time. Yeah, no, that's very much how Ben is built, for sure. I think there's also something, just in terms of Scott Speedman and Scott Foley do a great job of playing sort of two sides of a coin yeah. really well.
Yeah.
And making it not feel like just hot guys being hot. And that's, yeah. which I totally, you know, which, and listen, like it goes both ways. There are the multitude of female characters that mm-hmm. exist that are also just hot yeah. for no good reason is also, you know, ridiculous. But I wanted to talk really quickly about just Carrie Russell and mm-hmm. what sort of she does with this role. She finds ways, you know, you were talking earlier at the top of the episode about how bad you feel for her. Mm-hmm. And that's a testament to how great a silent actress
yes. Carrie
Russell would have been.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't even need to give her lines. Like she right. can just be sitting there and you're just like, someone be nice to Felicity, please. This poor girl is dying inside.
Yeah, like she's clearly going through it and you don't even need lots of scenes of her talking about going through it to like yep. get that. Like you get a little bit of that with the voiceover, but like it is like even just the amount of weight that she carries in that, or even just in the little flashes back to like to her and Simon of just like, oh no, like she, this is completely out of her character. Like mm-hmm. this is, like, you really do get, like, she carries so much of that so well.
She really, really does. And it's, and it goes to show, you know, we're talking in terms of, like, WB versus today. And I'm sure to some extent, I'm sure you deal with this on your show as well. But this show allows you to sit in a moment. Mm-hmm. It allows air to exist. I've worked on broadcast so shows. Yeah. You're not allowed air. No. Like you're not, it's like, it's got to keep moving. It's got to keep moving. This show will sit with Felicity for 10 or 15 seconds of nothing mm-hmm. and just allow you to feel this person's
yeah.
anguish or happiness or whatever it is. And that's so fucking rare.
Yeah, I miss that so much. I feel like that's that's like the realm of like cable dramas now.
But you said it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like it is essential to like telling this kind of story, because if it's like, it's called Felicity, you need to be able to sit with her when she's not just surrounded by 1,000 people.
Right.
You need to understand who she is. It's like literally like, it's like, I do.
It's really funny. On the commentary track on the pilot, Matt Reeves and J.J. Abrams talk about how the show was made fun of at the time for all the pregnant pauses, for all the like, for all the silence and the stewing and the drama. But I think it's one of his hallmarks. I think it's one of the things that it's, if it has a legacy, I'm sure it has something to do with her cutting her hair. But the other legacy is probably the fact that they allowed you to sit in these moments and allow it to really soak it up, allow you to really soak it up as an audience. So I think that's really special. But but I really, really appreciate that you came on to talk about this episode.
Yeah.
And I hope that we have lots of other TV and movies and music and lots of other things to talk about in 99. So we would absolutely love to have you back. I would love to be back.
Yes.
And maybe even be in the same room with us.
Yes, one day.
it's anything's possible. But
once there's a vaccine.
But I very much appreciate you coming on, and we hope to have you back very soon.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Thanks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.